Welcome to this episode of the Daily Actor Interview Podcast. I'm Lance Carter. So, we could all learn a bit from Zoe Kazan, even though she had a resume that a lot of us would kill for. I know I would. I mean, she's appeared on Broadway in A Behanding in Spokane, The Seagull. TV, she was in Bored to Death. And film, she was in Revolutionary Road, It's Complicated, and Meek's Cut Off. The actress started to write not only because she was bored from all the time off in between jobs, but because she was creatively unfulfilled, she told me. I've got to do something that makes me feel my self-worth comes from myself and not from whether a casting director likes me, she went on to say. So with that, she wrote her first play, Absalom, and now her first screenplay effort, Ruby Sparks, is in theaters. The film stars Kazan and Paul Dano, her boyfriend of 5 years, and was directed by Little Miss Sunshine's Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris. The film's about a young novelist, played by Dano, who is suffering from writer's block. When the enchanting Ruby Sparks, played by Zoe, comes to him in a dream, he frantically starts to write out his idea of a perfect woman. But he gets the ultimate surprise when a week later, she turns out to be real. The film is not your typical romantic comedy, and that's what ultimately makes it work. It's smart and funny, and at times it's sad and dark, and the film is just really wonderful. I talked to Zoe recently about the film, if it's harder to act in something that she's written, and what her worst survival job was. Incidentally, the night before this interview, I moderated a Q&A with Zoe and the directors, Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris, so you'll hear some talk about that in this interview. So I really do appreciate it when you support the advertisers, because every little click does help. And don't forget to check out our actor resources page, other interviews, and our daily news items. You can find all of that out and more on dailyactor.com. And now, here's Zoe.
Last night I was doing the Q&A.
Yes.
The moderating. So that was your last one?
Yes.
So what is it like to stand out there in front of all these people and you know, get bombarded with questions? And does it feel sort of strange?
Have you ever done that before? You know, we have been on the road for 3 weeks with this, so that Q&A was the last of many. I have done it before for other movies, but I've never written a movie before, so it's a different thing when you're being asked, you know, serious questions, not just like, how did you like working with so-and-so, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I love the Q&A, so that's actually my favorite part of this whole, like, press tour experience. Like, just the seeing an audience response, getting to, like, stop in at the end of the screening and hear whether they're laughing and what they're laughing at, and then, I don't know, hear people's thoughts and be really surprised. Like, I don't know, this is going to sound terrible, but I think growing up, like, I grew up in L.A., I live in New York, I don't know a lot about the character of some of these cities. Like, I'd never been to Dallas before, I'd never been to Minneapolis before, and to get to hear, like, what the film-going audience there thinks about is cool.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever have somebody in a Q&A that just asks something and you're like, you totally didn't get the character, or you totally didn't get the movie, or just something where they're saying, this reminds me of Mannequin, and you're like, no, it's nothing like Mannequin other than a person coming
yes,
to life. You know, you
Mannequin, Stranger Than Fiction.
Yeah. Oh, I figured the Stranger Than
yeah,
Fiction.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, people say these things to me, and I think, well, I understand, or Weird Science, that's the other one, where I think,
oh, yeah.
Okay, I get it, I get what you're responding to, but I think that this movie is so different from that. But, you know, I love that it's subjective, you know,
yeah.
That people take different things. That's interesting.
Well, and it's really weird because when people compare things like that, why then when a romance comes out, isn't everybody comparing it to The Last Ride?
It's like, I just thought of that, too.
Doesn't
every, like, Kate Hudson movie
yeah.
have the same plot?
Exactly.
And you don't say this is the same plot yeah. as The Last Ride?
Like, I mean, the movie I most thought of was Groundhog Day.
Oh, that's so
simply,
nice. That is exactly what I was
yeah,
thinking about.
It's like, because when he finally changes, then you're like, okay, now at the end, maybe it can work with her because he's not this.
You totally so. Get it. That's awesome.
That's does funny. That frustrate you to have critics that, like, maybe you would understand if a critic didn't like a few things, but if they just totally thrash the movie and you're going, really? Like, what?
But then I just think that this movie is not for that person. You know, the movies that I really love, I don't think are movies that are easily digestible.
Okay.
Like a movie like Harold and Maude, for instance.
Okay.
Like, I love that movie. It has a very strange tone. It's exactly itself. And I think that this movie is exactly itself. It's not, it doesn't, it's sort of genre bending. It doesn't fit easily into one category. I think not everybody's going to get it. Not everybody's going to get it on the first viewing. But then I go into, like I said, I go to audiences and I see so many people really get it, connect with it, you know, amused by it. And I think, well, that means a lot more to me, actually, than... And then you have critics who really get it, too. So I just kind of think, I don't know. If you make a movie that everybody likes, then your movie probably isn't that challenging.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know.
It's a good attitude to have. You're going to be writing more screenplays.
Yeah.
Why did you actually start to write? Because I know you wrote, you've written a couple plays.
Yeah.
And now this. What was the sort of reason you started?
It really was out of boredom, to be totally honest. I had written my whole life, but never thought I wanted to be a professional writer, and I had taken writing classes in college that I really loved, and I had started a play in one of those writing classes, and I was out of school, and I had started my acting life, and I was basically getting a job like every 4 months or something, and then maybe that job was a play and it would last a few months, or maybe it was a movie and it would last a few weeks, but then I would be unemployed again, and I was like doing, you know, day jobs for money, but I was feeling really creatively unfulfilled. So I thought, I've got to do something that makes me feel like my self-worth comes from myself and not from whether a casting director likes me. So I picked up that first play that I started in college again, and that play became my play Absalom that was produced at the Humana Festival in 2009. And then once I sort of opened those doors, it was like the floodgates opened and all these ideas came through, and now it's a huge part of my life.
What were the day jobs that you had?
Oh my god.
You?
Well,
to pay the rent.
The really bad one was there was an online service where they hired kids that had graduated from the Ivy Leagues to edit people's application essays for graduate school and college, and I was like editing and you were paid by how quickly you turned it around, and most of the people who apply for this service are people that don't speak English as a first language. So it was like a lot of broken English and trying to make people, and I felt like it was really morally bankrupt. Like, I thought what I was doing was probably really wrong, but it was a way that I could I could define my own hours. Anyways, that was the worst one. Yeah. That was the one that really made me, that was soul sucking.
When you were talking about plays, it made me think, I hope you said this, and I don't know why this pops into my head, but when you did a play with Christopher Walken, right?
Yeah.
Did you say, yeah, my dad wrote at Post Range? Like, I always think that would be fun to do when you're doing movies. Like, I mean, on the set of this, you're looking around, oh, there's Elliot Gould, there's Annette Bening. Like, you're doing a movie with these people that are legends. Like,
yeah.
Do you ever say little things like that? Or
no, you know, actually with Chris, Chris knew that my dad was... Nick, and actually Chris told me that he had worked with my grandpa as well, so he had worked with three generations of my family, which was really pretty cool, in a play called JB, that was his first job, or one of his first jobs.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like you're so lucky, especially with someone like Elliot Gould that's been around for so long, and you don't know how long he's going to keep working. Like,
yeah.
You know, he's been somebody I've just admired my whole life, and yeah. To get to, you know, have him speak my words was definitely like the thrill of a lifetime.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Is it harder to act in something you wrote? Are you more critical of yourself?
You know what? I actually think it was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. I think it would be very difficult to act in something I wrote on stage, because then you're doing the same thing every single night. You're hearing your same words. Like, I think that would be really painful. But on this, you know, like, first of all, I had rewritten the script for 9 months with Jonathan and Valerie. So I felt, by the time we went in, I mean, not with them, but for, you know, they gave me notes and I rewrote to those notes, and then they give me new notes, and we'd been through a process like that for about 9 months by the time we started shooting, and by that point I just felt like this is our movie, not just my movie anymore. So that was helpful. That makes it easier to let go of something. And then, you know, I thought it was going to be really weird to be, like, hearing my words come back to me and speaking them to someone, but it actually ended up feeling really normal.
Do you ever have a situation where Paul says, like, I don't know if you were dating during the filming, but...
We've been dating for 5 years.
Oh, okay. So do you have a situation where he goes, that line's not working, and you're like, no, that line perfectly works, and, you know, or is it something where when you get along, you can sort of talk about it in a creative...
We never fight at work.
Oh.
We've always had a really easy... We've worked together before, and we've always had a really easy time working together. There would be moments on set where he wouldn't be saying a line exactly as I'd written it, and I would go over to the script supervisor and be like, make him say it the way I wrote it. Then awesome. She'd go over and she'd be like, it's of, not about. And he'd like look over at me, and I would like look somewhere else, like, doo-doo-doo.
At what point in growing up did you say, you know what, this is what I want to do with my life?
No, very early, I guess. I think, you know, I was saying that I wanted to be an actor probably when I was like 5 or 6, but my parents didn't take it that seriously. And I always wrote, like I said, but I never really wanted to be a writer. And then I was like a freshman in high school and auditioned for a school play and came home and was like, guys, I'm an actor. And they were like, oh, no.
What was the play?
It was called The Dining Room.
I did that play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a play people do in high school.
Yeah, I did that play.
No, it's actually a really good play. But
A.R. Gurney, I think.
A.R. Gurney, that's right. Pete Gurney. He's a really good writer. And it's a fun play to do because you play, like, multiple parts. Mm-hmm. That was fun. I don't know. Yeah. I've always been pretty self-directed as a person and pretty willful. So once I set my mind on something, I go after it.
When you're writing, I this is going to be the stupidest question you're asked in all the press.
Great, I love it.
Okay. But I have to ask you because this other critic in town, Anders, he and I both loved that you name-checked Ricky Jay. It's one of these things where he and I always talk about Ricky Jay. I don't know why. We have this thing about Ricky Jay. And it was because he was at this party once, and I saw him, and I said, oh, he's a great character. And somebody told me, you know, he's this amazing magician. And this was years ago, and I started doing research. And, like, the things I read about him when it comes to magic, like being one of the best in the world at sleight of hand. And so the fact that you used that line in there, and I thought, like, why not David Copperfield, somebody that more people would know? But I like it better that you used Ricky Jay. Like, do you ever, when you have a scene like that, think, I should really use this person's name and more people will understand?
That is a really good question. And I will tell you something super embarrassing about me, which is that I grew up basically totally sheltered from pop culture. Like, I grew up with no TV and very little, like, I don't know, my parents were, like, showing us, like, Barbara Stanwyck movies instead of showing us, like, you know, whatever was coming out at the time.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of, like, cultural references that I think are, like, normal that other people don't think are normal. So Ricky Jay was an L.A.-based magician. Mm. My parents had gone and seen him a couple times when I was a kid. So for me, that was just, like, that was the most famous magician. So I think that that's why it came out that way. And then I think Ricky fucking Jay is funnier than, like, David fucking Copperfield. Like, I think I just think it's a funnier, it sounds funnier, like, the syllables. And not everyone has to get everything.
I agree, but I would be one of those guys that, like, when I see a movie, I like that more. But then I would be a guy that if I worked for the studio, I'd be the one you'd hate. Because I go, just use David Copperfield more. But, you know, it's weird how
I can
No
one said that to me ever.
Good.
No one ever mentioned that to me. They probably should have, but they didn't.
Ah, okay, good, because I liked it better that way.
When you were writing, you have a perfect cast. I loved everybody in the film. Did you have people in mind? And did you kind of say to Jonathan and Valor, hey, this would be a great person?
The only people we had in mind were me and Paul, to be totally honest. I had written about 5 pages of it, and I showed it to Paul, which is something I normally do when I'm writing. And he asked if I was writing it for us to act in. And I hadn't thought of it. And as soon as he said it, it seemed like, okay, yeah, that's totally what I'm doing. Like, it became completely clear to me. And then from that point on, it felt like actually us being cast was a way of talking about what kind of movie we wanted to make. Like, you know, I'm not, I don't mean to be disparaging of myself, but I don't look like Kelly LeBrock. So, you know, immediately it's not about, you know, it's not weird science. It's not about fantasy woman. It's about a real girl, you know, and it's, you know, the kind of actor that Paul is and the kind of movies that he does. It's kind of a way of talking about the kind of film we want to make.
Yeah.
So when we sent it out to producers, if they weren't interested in making it with us, then we weren't interested in making it with them. And the same thing with the director. You know, everyone else was just a wonderful surprise that Jonathan and Valerie came up with. Like, people, you know, someone like Antonio was not at all who I had in mind when I wrote that part.
And great casting.
Amazing casting. Like, of course that guy would irritate Calvin more than anyone.
And when he takes off the mask, the big reveal.
Yeah, it's so great.
Perfect, yeah.
Thanks, Zoe, and thank you guys for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV, and theater, and so much more. Thank you so much for supporting the advertisers. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.